T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That was Steve Traxel when we were celebrating the 1998 Cubs to keep max engagement level high during the middle of baseball season.
An embellishment, but that's what it was.
It's a version of the truth.
He sounded, I don't remember the phone line being that bad when we had him on, but that was kind of a rough phone line. Heard every word he said, just strained for some of it, but his feelings have been hurt by the Cubs, and that's not going to change this week.
My guess is there's two sides to a story, right? Do you really believe that Steve Traxel has no idea why he's not invited?
I don't know.
Well, just look at the list.
I'll text him in a little bit, and I'll ask him.
I mean, just listen to some of these guys that are on the alumni list.
I've seen it. It's underwhelming.
Dave Otto is on the list. He was here for one season.
Yeah, but he's a palindrome.
Okay, he's a palindrome.
Let's get Blatto with Otto. He's former Score baseball expert, Dave Otto.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Rich Nye is on the list.
He's Rich Nye is a former relief pitcher who yelled at me once when I did nothing. Someone was picking on a bat boy, one of the first Cubs games I went to. I believe he is a veterinarian now, or was. I'm surprised Rich Nye is still with us. God, I was a kid. I was like a 10-year-old.
Ryan Sweeney is on the list, as I just pulled random Cubs alums here.
Koye Hill.
Koye
is here, yeah.
Also on the list, Todd Haney. It's just...
Todd Haney?
Yeah, man.
Todd freaking Haney. I barely remember him. Utility infielder, right?
Yeah, from 1994 to 1996. it's a funny list because you have
before you text us and ask us. Yes, I'll let you know that Pete LeCocq is on his way.
Of course, can't have Cubs convention without Pete LeCocq and Sean Marshall.
Love LeCocq.
Jeff Smarja.
He's on the list.
Sammy's coming?
No. Samarja's not on the list. No, he's employed.
David DeJesus.
He'd be a good guest.
David DeJesus would be a good guest. Good storyteller. He is on the list.
Ted Lilly's coming. They're just not going to let him have a ball. What's that mean? Well, they didn't let him pitch in the 0-8 divisional series. That's what it means.
So, yeah, Steve Traxel, clearly a good enough Cub to make the list, is the point we're making.
I hate the stat that encompasses over a decade, but it is a testimony to a player's success over a period of time. It just, you have to be fortunate to be coming in at the beginning of a decade and staying a good portion of it. So when you hear somebody say, decade of the 90s, as in the case with Traxel, that helps him because he was here for a good percentage. It's not like getting here in 96 and pitching until 04. It's hard to hold franchise records over a decade. So I admit the stat is skewed, but he won more games than any Cubs pitcher in that decade. Furthermore, when they needed somebody to go an additional game that season to get into the wild card round, to get into the playoffs, it was Steve Traxel, to whom Jim Riggleman gave the baseball, and he beat the Giants. I think that's more significant than anything Koye Hill ever did.
I agree with you. I don't think this list is based on significance. I think it's clearly based on relationship.
Do Cubs fans, for the most part, have... I mean, I know there are Cubs fans who don't like Steve Traxel because he took so long to deliver the ball, but do they have a fondness for two-thirds of these guys?
I don't know, Mac. I honestly don't know. Texter says Steve Traxel just took 3 minutes between every pitch. It was brutal.
That's my point.
So I get it. I don't know.
But is there an emotional attachment to a Todd Haney? Are people screaming for a Les Lancaster who came out of the bullpen in 89?
No, my guess is...
Glendon Rush is there. Maybe maybe he can give him a Heimlich and we can get that milk dud out of his lung.
Sandberg, Billy Williams, Fergie, I co-opted the two. Kerry Wood.
Angel Pecan.
Not coming.
I want some Angel Pecans on my French vanilla ice cream.
Look, my guess is Kerry Wood's booth will be a little busier than Paul Popovich's booth. It would just be...
These guys cost money to bring them in. You've got to fly them here. You've got to pay probably an appearance fee. You've got to put them up. You probably get a per diem. They have to eat. I don't know. Is it less of a convention if Sean Marshall isn't a part of it? He did the stretch one game this year, too.
But he's local, so they probably don't have to put him up.
Oh, that's true. Cost-efficient. Yeah. It is cost-efficient. How about Augie Ojeda? Is he still living around here?
No idea.
Augie
Ojeda. He gets to fly in the overhead bin, so you don't have to even buy him an airplane ticket to get on the plane.
That's very good. Yuffy.
I do think you and Steve Traxel might be the only people taking up the cause on getting Trax to Cubs convention.
Not for me. I didn't really. Steve Traxel was not one of my guys on that 98 team. I had guys on the 98 wild card Cubs, but he wasn't among them. In fact, I thought he was a bit of Charlie Tool time. And then I, had a radio partner who said, "You don't know him. Try to get to know him a little bit." And Tynowitz was right. I did get to know him a little bit, and I like what I know. He never relaxed very much, though. His interviews were always uptight, and he was not himself. The Traxel I've gotten to know after his career is not the same guy who was Steve Traxel. So
that happens all the time, right?
Yeah,
Olin Krutz.
Not all the time, but a lot of the time. Yeah, Olin's a guy. Yeah,
right. You know, so many times when it's the media and the spotlight and the pressure, and then you relax when it goes and it changes. So
Mike Remlinger, the left-hander coming out to work the seventh inning, is on his way to town.
Welcome, thanks.
Big list of current Cubs.
Yeah, those are all welcome. Those are all good.
Yeah. The notables that aren't there, you will not have Addison Russell in attendance, I would imagine, for obvious reasons. John Lester is not going to be there. And Anthony Rizzo, who's been a fixture at Cubs conventions in the past, will not be there. He is currently on his honeymoon, I saw on social media.
Okay.
So that would be an excused absence. But basically everybody else that you could imagine is going to be at Cubs convention.
Yeah. A lot of the guys from the 69 team still with us and planning on attending.
So who do you want? Give me what's your dream?
Oh,
your dream
I don't want to be selfish. My childhood hero was Billy Williams.
I think we should be able to make that happen. Billy Williams in attendance. I would think we'd be able to make that happen here.
That's selfish, though.
That's okay.
I'll resurrect unsupervised and talk to Billy Williams. We'll talk blue. We'll talk about the adult film industry back in the 60s.
You don't think the audience would like to hear from Sweet Swing and Billy Williams at Cubs convention?
Yes, I think some of them might.
Let's make it the number one pick.
Well, that would be my number one pick.
It's a bucket list item for you. Let's do it.
Woody was on the station recently. Maybe he'll do a double dip.
Would love to talk to
him. He was on with Bernstein and McKnight talking about his charity event.
There we go. And I... I'd like to talk to Kerry Wood for me, and Kyle Farnsworth would also be fun. I got to imagine.
I'll talk to Farnsworth, will you?
I got to imagine Farnsworth has some really good stories.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
He was a party animal.
Yeah, so I would think Farnsworth has some.
And he tackled Paul Wilson for perfect form.
Right. He's just that guy that we could talk to him about the Cubs fighters. Remember, he was a very popular name around the Kyle Hendricks karate. We got to get Kyle Hendricks on the show.
Kyle Schwarzberg.
Hi, Hendricks would be great.
Hendricks is there. Hayward's a great interview. Hamels is a great interview.
Sutcliffe would be good. We could ask him if his daughter's trying to work the Congress. Him and her and a George Clooney, right?
I don't. Is that audio?
Drunk Sutcliffe.
Yes,
yeah,
drunk
in the
Sutcliffe.
Booth with Matt Viskurgin. Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about.
I know the audio. It's all time. I had forgotten.
She's on her way to Africa tomorrow.
There it is.
How about that?
How about that? Yeah, this is going to be good. It's always a balance at these things with any sort of news and just an acknowledgement that they're there to shake hands, kiss babies, sign autographs, take pictures. And,
that's what it is.
And have some fun before they go back to spring training.
As it should be.
Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of time for the news. But, Mac, breaking news bulletin.
Yes, sir.
We have our man in the white hat for the Super Bowl.
Yes, working his second Super Bowl. It's going to be John Perry, who wears jersey number 132. John is a native of Michigan City. And you know, I'm looking at Parkins as I say every word. It's all committed to brain and to heart. I think he's 4 years younger than I am, even though he looks a little bit older than I do. A pretty good referee. I believe he did the Rams and Cowboys this past weekend.
Yes, that is on the store here. Yeah, I did Rams Cowboys this past weekend. But let me see if any of these other names do anything for you. Umpire.
I don't know the staff.
Oh,
staffs.
You don't?
No.
You don't
know?
Well, it's a super staff. It's the, remember? It's,
I know,
the,
which okay. I argued with Jerry Markbright last year on Super Bowl Sunday. And it's, you know what? That's a good idea, Mac. Argue with the guy who's refereed in more Super Bowls than anybody, Jerry Markbright, saying, why wouldn't you work with the regular crew? Why would you do an all-star crew without having any opportunity to work together to get a feel of how each other work? I would think that you would want some sort of consistency there, right?
I would think so also, but or you could just say you all have an assignment. The assignments are uniform, right? The mm-hmm. the umpire looks for holding and et cetera. Like everybody, all side judges know what a side judge is supposed to do. So whoever gets the highest grades among those assignments should call the biggest games.
I suppose. I see both sides of it, but I just think it would be easier if they did it with everybody working with their regular crew.
Yeah, I understand. And the thing that they always say is, I like when those refs get together and they talk about something and then they discuss a call. I always like to see that. Well, are you going to do that with an all-star crew if you don't know everybody? Right? Don't you hear that all the time in broadcast? Yeah. Good job picking up that flag. They had a conversation and they realized that they got that one wrong.
I doubt this would be a Super Bowl prop you would entertain. I did it last year for the first time and I live to regret it. And that the number was kind of low for over-under on penalties in the Super Bowl. I went over and Gene Steratore's crew, like so many Super Bowl crews before it, was very lax. People don't sign up for the Super Bowl to watch an official. They sign up to watch the games and they let stuff go all the time.
When you say you don't suspect that would be a wager that I would be up for, I'm curious if we've met.
So, penalties in a game?
Whatever, man. I've bet on the Gatorade bath, the national anthem, the number of planes in a flyover. I try to get inside information about whether or not they're going to be wearing their jackets after kickoff by talking to broadcasters who work at NBC.
All right, I wasn't aware of that.
You think you could out-degenerate me? I'll out-degenerate you any day.
Television audience.
Yeah, whatever, man. I'll bet on it all. If you tell me that there's a market inefficiency on a wager for the number of penalty flags.
Yeah.
Let's empty the account.
Okay, well, we're working on it.
It.
You know what? We are heading right toward that. Yeah, if we have anything left for Super Bowl Sunday. It's been slim pickings. What songs Maroon 5 is going to play? They added a rapper to the mix yesterday. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't know.
There's a rapper who's going to come on stage for one show with Maroon 5.
One song?
Yeah, I don't know the rapper, and I'm not, I'd know it if you said it, but I'm not retaining it. That's something I will never get overly excited about. I don't care who plays Super Bowl at halftime. I don't want to watch, and it doesn't matter if it's one of my favorite bands. I would rather not watch if it's somebody I really like because I don't want to see them operate under suboptimal conditions. It's not easy to do a music show in front of 75,000 people, and they slam it together in a matter of minutes. There are technical glitches. It's not the way you do a show with the world's best musicians, and often the show is compromised because of it.
Travis Scott and Big Boy are going to perform.
You familiar? You a fan?
I mean, you know, Big Boy's kind of funny. I used to hear him do the celebrity pick'em segment on Levitard all the time, and he would do it high from his backyard, saying he was smoking on that gas. So he's pretty funny. Like, okay. I mean, we have some similar sensibilities. Travis Scott, very talented, but I obviously can't name any songs.
Yeah.
Tanny?
Yeah, I'm not a Travis Scott fan, but Big Boy, of course, are the legendary Outkast. That's where you would know Big Boy from.
Correct.
And I am a fan of Outkast, so that should be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. And you say you would rather not watch. Like, I'm not changing the channel during halftime.
And they always put find so something else to do. I mean, if I'm at a party, I'll visit with people. If I'm at the game, I'll find the ramp and get outside the stadium and go have a cigarette. I just, you know, there's other things to do. Make a sandwich.
But you were at the Super Bowl when Prince
did
Purple Rain,
yes,
and you missed it.
I had, you know, about a 25-minute break to go downstairs and have a cig. So that's what I did. I'm not a Prince fan, even if I were. Yeah, you know, everyone said it was great. That's great. I don't really, you know, want to see it. I didn't want to see the Stones in Detroit in Super Bowl 40. I'm not interested in that. That's kind of, it's like playing the AFC Championship game outdoor in cold weather.
Oh, jeez. You would not have wanted to see the Stones
for 7 minutes, do a medley, and
it's I think they're what, 12-minute sets. It's 12 minutes more than you had seen them before.
Watch the video of the Stones in Detroit at Super Bowl XL, partner, and you will see a pissed off Keith Richards because he can't hear himself. He can't hear the guitar. They had technical things. He's pointing at his ear for 30 seconds at one stretch of it.
Sure.
That's not how you make live music.
Well, no. Okay, so it's suboptimal conditions, but suboptimal conditions for the Stones, I would think, is still better than no Stones. I would think.
Nah. When, okay. You know, when they asked Michelangelo to paint, they didn't give him 3 brushes. They gave him 12 brushes.
I see. Only the best for the best.
Yeah, yeah. Set it up and do it right.
Okay. Set it up and do it right. I if you go to a Super Bowl party, and we'll talk about this as the game nears, I'm shocking to you guys. I like a real controlled environment. I need to know the guest list. I know that the volume's going to be good. I know that the food's going to be good. It's always very stressful to me if you're with too many people in the Super Bowl, and it takes away attention from the game.
Yeah. You're in your early 30s. You're probably going to go to Super Bowl parties for a few more years, and then one day you and Steph will decide, let's just stay home and watch this together. That's what Sherry and I do.
I've already...
Usually, almost invariably. I think we've been to 2 parties since we've been together, going back to Super Bowl, I don't know, whatever it was, 15, 14 years ago.
Yeah, it depends. If it's the small crew and I know everyone, no problem, but they can't go to a random situation where there's 50 people at a Super Bowl party. That sounds miserable.
38 was our first Super Bowl.
You and Sherry?
Yeah. Patriots and Panthers.
Oh. Houston.
Yes, in Houston.
That's right.
That was our first
Remember
Super
the kicker
Bowl
that tied the game and then promptly kicked it out of bounds for that set up Vinatieri?
I don't.
Is it John Cassie or Casey?
I don't remember. Oh, John Casey. Yes, John Casey was the Panthers place kicker.
It's a Janet Jackson Super Bowl, no?
Yes, it was. Very nice.
Well done. I know we have more Super Bowl history today that we will get to coming up a little bit later on.
It's the anniversary. The greatest event in American television history was born on this day in 1967 when Super Bowl I was played.
There's no footage of it anywhere. Not footage, but full game anyway.
That's crazy. You would think that they would have figured out a way to document the event. This hour on the Score brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. You want to do a little True Detective Tuesday?
Absolutely, yes. I'm a feminist after all.
Let's get into it. McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
10 years is nothing. I remember everything.
Well, we can't know. I mean, well, you don't remember. You don't know you don't remember.
There's some education in semantics you're giving me. Hey, let's skip the deposition and I can just take notes on your lecture.
Could you tell us about November 7th, 1980? Your timeline of events.
Sure. November 7th, 1980. Friday. I remember it was the day Steve McQueen died.
You have memory problems, right?
What?
Episodes 1 and 2, True Detective Season 3. We've all seen it. Let's discuss.
Episode number 1, The Great War and Modern Memory. Just a terrific start to what I enjoyed a few years ago. Many of us did in 2012 and into 13. I feel like True Detective is back. I think...
You're already willing to declare that.
I feel pretty good. And we're going to critique it on Tuesdays. We won't do, I don't know, a ton of specifics, I don't think. I don't know if it's going to get to the point where we'd ruin it for you if you're trying to record it. But if you're really a fan of True Detective, you got Monday to catch up if you missed it on Sunday night, and we won't feel guilty if we spoil it for you. But we'll always warn you that we're going to do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. It'll be 10 minutes, and then if you don't want it, just come back, and we'll be back into sports or otherwise nonsense. But yeah, there might be some spoilers here. My initial impression of the first two episodes was it felt very much like season one in terms of the formula.
Yep.
All the way down to a point where it almost was a little troubling how much it felt like season one.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the dolls being the same
the little voodoo thing, whatever they were.
The sculpture things.
You might want to talk to an anthropologist. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, right. Like, I get jumping timelines, and I get the interview style. And
that was very similar to the first season. I had the same thought Sunday night.
And so that almost felt a little lazy, which is a huge charge against the show that is right. as so good as season one was. But
the little girl who's missing got one on Halloween while trick-or-treating.
Yeah, I felt like that was a little too similar to season one for my liking as a plot device.
How about the relationship between our leads, our detectives? Mahershala, is that how it's pronounced, Ali?
Mahershala.
Mahershala Ali, Academy Award winner, and Stephen Dorff, is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff. I love him. I love both of them so far. You like the dynamic between the two?
I think it's great. And I know Shep and Tanny, you guys both watch too, so please participate here.
Yeah, I do like the rapport that they're developing because they're opposites, you know, in a lot of ways, but in most ways they're very similar in their approach to the job. They do the job on the outskirts of what's allowable by law, let's say, put that mildly. They have common interests as far as that goes, and I think some of the best lines of the show so far are the very short back and forth between the two of them.
You don't think you're supposed to take a guy into a barn, tie his hands behind his back, and beat the crap out of him so he gives you information, then throw him in the trunk of your car and tell him all kinds of horrible things that'll make everybody have bad thoughts about life in prison?
Yeah, outskirts of the law.
Outskirts of the law.
They operate on the edges.
Just on the outskirts of the law. Let's go beat the crap out of some people. Only didn't say crap. God, I hope so.
Yeah, they seem to have the same degenerate tendencies. I'm a little surprised. Is Stephen Dorff a huge actor that I just am not familiar with?
I would say he's a name, but someone who's possibly, you know, fallen out of the public eye, to put that mildly. But I think, you know, the track is, I think he's going to have, like, this is going to be like a breakout for him, like a renaissance of Stephen Dorff if there ever was.
Really?
You know, yeah.
Could be. Only one person texted us. Yes, he's 45 years old. He's from Atlanta. Dorff, yesterday we mentioned him by name, and someone said, how in the world can you say there are no names other than Ali in the series? Because Dorff, that one guy, felt like he was a big enough name where we all should know him. But I'm looking at his filmography right now, and he's not even that guy actor, really.
Okay.
Do you remember him from Blade, Immortals,
that
somewhere?
Might be the, like, only thing I remember him from.
Not exactly.
And he was Depp Public Enemies, too. I remembered his face from that, but I never would have known his name.
Yeah, what do you always say, Mac? Don't confuse activity with accomplishment.
That's right.
IMDb page reeks of that with the Stephen Dorff.
So, one guy's texting in and said there are theories that all the seasons are connected, and at the end of season one, Cole said that he knew that they didn't catch them all in terms of the dolls and the figurines and whatever it was in season one, but they're all different states. I thought they were all supposed to be standalone shows.
Yeah, I don't feel there's anything that would connect this to the first season yet, other than there's the similarities in terms of the formula, but nothing that connects any of these crimes or anything like that.
I wouldn't think so either, but who knows, and we'll see where it goes. I do think it's setting up to be a lot simpler is the wrong word, but season two didn't make any sense. Like, season two, just there was all those loose ends. They tried to, there was all a twist, and then no one knew what the hell season two was.
Mm-hmm.
Season one was a lot simpler. It was, there's a serial killer out there. Let's see if we can catch him. This is, two kids disappear.
Somebody has abducted two children. And, of course, everybody suspects it's the trash man because there's a guy who rides around town in a tractor and he tows a, you know, a trailer, and he salvages garbage.
Outcast in that rural town. And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned him, played by a man by the name of Michael Gray Eyes. And he was probably my favorite part of the second episode. He plays a former Vietnam vet who, you know, there's some similarities there with Ali's character. Actually, both Dorf also was in Nam, correct? They both served?
Yeah, both detectives were in Nam, and Mahershala Ali was like, what did they call him? Like a long-range reconnaissance man? Yeah. Like he
go in the jungle for
weeks on end.
Yeah. Walk out with.
Said he told his soon-to-be wife he spent 2 years in the jungle.
Yeah.
They called him Purple Haze.
Yeah. But
are you high, Purple Haze?
and that can be a little off-putting, like the super cop stuff, where it's like, oh, wait, how the hell did this guy solve that? He just has some sort of like superpower or something. But I thought that he sold it. I thought he sold, and they did a good job with the backstory from Warren. He's trained in tracking down things.
Just joining us, we're talking about True Detective Season 3, which debuted Sunday night on HBO. They started with a 2-episode feature to get you rolling. Episode 3 will be this coming Sunday night. I assume in a couple weeks they'll take a break during Super Bowl week like HBO did a few years ago, which pissed me off because I was just like, come on, I can roll on it. I'll watch it as soon as the Super Bowl is over. But I think it is off to a rip-roaring start. I've watched both of the first 2 episodes twice. I watched them again last night. Now, I did fall asleep in the middle, not because I found it to be uninteresting. It's just I'm old and I'm tired and it was running late. So
it could be a sleepy show at times.
Does
you have to
move
be in a
slowly.
Certain kind of mood.
Yes,
yeah.
It does move slow. It's dark, and there are some these characters, our detectives, we're going to find out, have some real deep-rooted demons. I think both of them, just as we learned pretty quickly with Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey in the first season, these guys are going to have, there are skeletons coming out of that closet, I have a feeling.
I have no problem with slow, methodical, moving dramas as long as they do something for some comedic relief within the dialogue. Mm-hmm. And like that's what The Wire does, that's what The Sopranos does, that's what True Detective Season 1 did, and that's what this did through 2 episodes. Mm-hmm. Like there was a nice dynamic between the 2 detectives.
That was a vivid description. It's going to haunt me.
Yeah. It cuts the tension a little bit, right? You watch it for 12 minutes and you're all tensed up about what's going to happen,
right.
And then there's a funny back and forth. And you're
like, there are some funny lines. I'm a feminist.
Yes.
Should I leave it at that?
Should probably leave it at that.
Okay, I'll leave it at that.
Probably leave it at that, yeah.
All right.
And no, Texter, you do not have to watch Seasons 1 and 2 to watch and enjoy Season 3.
No.
Yeah,
But you should probably watch Season 1. It's that by itself is one of the great episodic television events that I can recall, and it's right up there with anything I've ever seen. Season 1.
I've seen season 1 4 times. I have the DVD collection, and I've gone back and watched it at least 3 times. Watched 4 straight episodes over our Christmas break just recently.
Some of the best.
4 straight.
Yeah. I mean, both Woody Harrelson and McConaughey, both nominated for Emmys.
Yep.
They were both incredible. Alexandra Daddario was introduced to the world in all of her amazing glory, and still one of the greatest action scenes that I've seen in television. The single camera shot of McConaughey getting him out,
continuous shot. Yeah,
yeah. This the one camera tracking. It was a remarkable television accomplishment.
Yeah, I have loved everything I've seen Ali do, and this is falling right in line with that. His character is understated yet very strong. There's a lot troubling him. And his life, I have a feeling we're going to see it get better before it gets torn apart. We know that he is widowed. A woman he met while doing an investigation. School teacher, he marries because we meet them later in life. There's 3 different time elements. There's 1990. That's when they're doing their depositions to try and see if there was something that wasn't unlocked from the 1980 case they initially were pursuing. And there's present day. I have a feeling her death is going to have something to do with one of the cases he's working. We don't know how she died yet, do we?
We do not, and possibly we'll figure out that's why he's estranged with one of his daughters.
Correct.
Probably has something to do with what happened with the mother.
Correct. And, Mac, I will just say, separate from True Detective, you should watch more TV. If you love True Detective this much, like Texter says, if you like True Detective, watch The Night Of. You know, absolutely. There's so much good drama and dark stuff like this that's out there that television lends itself to more than movies.
I'm aware.
I'm just saying.
I know.
Because it comes to, why are you doing this for True Detective? We're doing it because Mac loves True Detective on a level that Tanny and I love The Sopranos and The Wire and a bunch of other shows.
Well, I have a feeling this is going to be, again, a very, very successful show among adult men.
I agree, and I think Mahershala Ali seems poised to win an Emmy and be back in that circle because he is remarkable.
Mahershala Ali. I need to say that over and over again. I'll do it on my own time. Mahershala.
And I'm glad they decided to go between the 1980 and the 1990 scenes. They chose to give him the skin high top fade. He's bald. He got the bald fade on the side and then the high top on top. It's very tough with the 80 and the 90. I'm glad they made that distinction with the high top fade.
It's a good point by you, Danny. It helps with the timing there. It's easy when they do the present day, the gray hair and all that. That's a little less subtle.
Right. He looks like Julius Erving.
He's got some Julius Erving.
Dr. J.
At least in the hair coloring. Yeah,
the hair coloring.
Yeah,
right.
No, you're right.
What's Dr. J doing in True Detective? Oh, wait a minute.
This segment is brought to you by Subway. Satisfy your steak-a-tite with Subway Restaurants. $3.99 6-inch steak and cheese. Hurry in this month only. January only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. I thought that there was way too much consternation and freaking out about a local sports story. So I thought it was unnecessary. We'll get into why coming up on The Score.
That was a vivid description. It's going to haunt me.
When does support start turning into boots to asses?
Yeah, well, we've had some boots to asses, and we'll continue to have that. And we'll handle that stuff as we go, handle it in practice.
That is Bulls head coach Jim Boylan saying that they've had some boots to asses stuff, whatever that means. Bottom of the hour on The Score brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves return home for rivalry week. Tomorrow, it's Grand Rapids on a craft beer arena bar crawl night. Saturday, they battle Rockford at an Illinois Lottery Cup game. Sunday, they got Milwaukee, all with free parking, courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com.
Fortunately for you, Parkins, I'm wearing my Jim Boylan decoder ring, and I can tell you exactly what he means by boots to asses.
Okay.
He's playing the role of Norman Dale, the coach of Hickory High School in the film Hoosiers, who told his kids, "My practices aren't designed for your enjoyment." My favorite line in the movie, probably. Yes, he is the drill instructor. He is a guy who is coaching in the NBA, unlike any other coach in the 21st century. He believes you can go to the whip, and we'll see if he can make it through the entire 82-game schedule without a revolt.
Let's move. Come on, let's move.
Where do we scrimmage?
We don't scrimmage. No shooting, either.
No fun.
My practices aren't designed for your enjoyment.
Oh, I love that.
There it is.
My practices aren't designed for your enjoyment.
Well, the midway point in the NBA season has come and gone, and the Bulls have 10 wins.
Mm-hmm. So, which is good.
Well, that's the thing.
They're going to be very physically fit, and they're going to get they're going to get in the lottery, and maybe they'll have the number one pick.
They'll get they'll have tremendous cardiovascular endurance, but what happened recently with Joe Colley's report and that everyone else came over and also was reporting it, that Jim Boylan got a raise.
Mm-hmm.
And Bulls Twitter and a lot of our media brethren seemed to be all up in arms over this.
Right.
And here's the thing. Not only should you not be upset about it, I would go as far as to say that you should be upset if he did not get a raise, because
he's been making assistant coach money.
Exactly. You don't want to be seen as cheap to the rest of the league.
They should have given him what the base level is as soon as they replaced Hoiberg with him.
And my guess is that that was their plan, but because of just the news cycle and a bunch of things going on, and it's a contract and it took a while, and so it happened to come. Now, I get it. It came out after they got 40-balled by the Warriors. So it was like the timing of what Jim Boylan got a raise. The team stinks. They're not responding to him. There's been all this dysfunction in the news. There's the leadership committee, and Robin Lopez and Chris Dunn are fighting at practice.
Scrapping at practice. Yeah. Well, that's good. They're showing their enthusiasm. What did they say was missing? Spirit. Did John Paxson use the word spirit, right? Yeah, at the news conference when they fired Hoiberg.
Yeah. Jim Boylan said it was a good thing, the practice. And Lopez came back and apologized to the team. And then there's another report that Robin Lopez wants his contract bought out so that he can go play for the Warriors, and the Bulls are going to not do that because they want to trade him. So there's all sorts of noise and dysfunction, and the bottom line is the Bulls are just bad, and Jim Boylan feels very archaic, and Lauri Markkanen hasn't taken the second-year jump yet that we were all hoping that he would, and it's been awful. It's been an undeniably awful Bulls season. But giving Jim Boylan a little bit more money because now he's the head coach instead of the assistant coach could not matter any less.
That's being upset because you want to be upset. It's just a reminder that the organization you want to see succeed has not found the right guy. And I can't think of another reason why that would upset somebody. It's not like they're paying him top dollar. We don't even know what it is, do we?
No, we don't. And now here's where I would say it does become a problem and worthy of you being upset about. If in this offseason, because I heard Joe Cowley today with Dan and Connor, and he said, barring something, I think he used catastrophic, Jim Boylan's going to be the coach at the start of next season because they're still paying Fred Hoiberg $5 million next year, and they got Jim Boylan, and Jerry Reinsdorf is not exactly known for loving to paying coaches who aren't working for him. Now, if Fred Hoiberg gets another gig, that offsets against his money, but he might just go sit on a beach and collect the Bulls' money. We'll see. But if Jim Boylan is the coach next year because they don't want to eat a little bit of money and they know that Jim Boylan isn't going to be the coach of the future, then I'll be furious because they have the money. Coaching salary doesn't count against any sort of salary cap.
Right. So right. They're a solvent organization. They have the money.
Don't penny pinch with your assistant coaches.
I agree wholeheartedly.
But right now, they made the decision to fire Fred Hoiberg. Right, wrong, fair, unfair, passionate, indifferent, whatever. They already made that decision. You can't change it. So Jim Boylan's a head coach. So he gets a promotion or a raise from assistant coach. That's not a big deal. But if at the end of the year they're like, ugh, we don't want to pay Fred. We know Jim Boylan sucks, but we don't want to pay Fred, Jim Boylan, and fill in the blank next coach.
Right.
And they pinch the pennies then I will crush them, and I think that they will be it will be deserving of your criticism. But right now, honestly, they're doing exactly what we should all be rooting for, losing basketball games.
That's the most important thing right now.
And it sucks.
Yeah,
and it's not enjoyable.
Tanking is never I haven't been paying much attention. I think a lot of people have been, unless you're a really ardent NBA fan and you got to watch the Bulls when they break a sweat. I don't talk to many people who say they watch.
No, I've watched less than I normally watch, but I normally watch the vast majority of Bulls games.
What troubles you about Markkanen in year two?
It feels...
And I have a feeling I ask you that question, not just for my benefit, but for the benefit of 80% of the audience who hasn't seen much of him.
It feels like, and he started the year with an injury, so I am willing to acknowledge that he's earlier in his season than the rest of the team is and that maybe it'll change, but him and Zach LaVine don't seem to play together well, and those are supposed to be your two best offensive players. It feels like they don't have a two-man game together. It feels like LaVine's not Markkanen doesn't get the ball in the places that he wants to get it. Stephen Noah did a good piece over at at the Athletic with some video breakdown, but he doesn't seem to be as confident in his game, and the efficiency's gone, and a big part of it seems to be that they're not getting him the ball in the right spot. And when Markkanen gets the ball, there's 6 seconds left on the shot clock. And so he has to take lower percentage shots than he otherwise would if he was the focal point of the offense. They still have no point guard. Like, when I watch, that's the thing that I see. They have no offensive identity, and they have no point guard. It's a point guard league, and you've got to get up the floor quick and get into your sets quick, because
once you get into a half court, these guys are all such good athletes that, and you don't have such superstar players that you just end up taking bad shots and low percentage shots and whatever. You need to get up into your offense quicker. And they just, and I see Robin Lopez posting up guys from 14 feet away, dribbling backwards towards the rim. And I'm like, what is this, 1985?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a different type of game. That's the type of game I grew up covering when I was working for Chet.
Yeah, and it's odd. It's weird to watch because if you are also being honest, and I think that the Bulls, the dysfunction, it's well documented, how long they've been here, how Teflon they are, the job security, the incestuousness, the nepotism that it seems like exists. You know I've railed against all of it. Some of the big moves, actually, recently, they've gotten right. Like, they won the Jimmy Butler trade. They got the Markkanen.
Yes, they did.
They got the Markkanen pick right.
Wendell Carter seems like he's going to be a good player. He's not getting enough playing time. I mean, I could read the box score and see minutes, and I'm thinking, what are you not playing him for? Why is he not getting out there?
Yeah, Boylan seems to unceremoniously sometimes get frustrated with him and bench him way too early when this is a developmental year, and that's infuriating because there have been nice moments of Markkanen and Carter playing off of each other. Boylan is just, he seems to be steeped in some version of NBA basketball, both in how he talks to the media, both in how he practices, and how he plays. It feels like I'm watching basketball from 20 years ago. And it's not, so it makes it really hard to get into it because the piece.
How much of it have you watched?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah, we just don't talk about it. Because they're not worthy of us talking about them. But I mean,
they're not worthy.
They're not. They're not. But I watch a lot.
Believe me, in 50 plus loss Bulls seasons, I've never had complaints about the absence of Bulls yak on a show.
I trust me, I know I love the Bulls. I love the NBA also, because even if you're watching like tonight, so LeBron's not there, but you know. Still, I'll watch Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram. Or a couple nights ago, I'm watching the Warriors just 40 ball the Bulls.
Well, and meanwhile, I'm listening. I looked up at the Hawks Devils, which is on rebroadcast from last night, and in about 2 minutes, the Devils went from 4-6. Like this is our winter, isn't it?
Yeah, both teams suck, and so I'm a Bulls fan, and I care about the future, and I watch. But yeah, it's frustrating because it seems like the Bulls. Brass actually has done a night. Like if you give them the, all right, they're here, they're going to have their job. Let's look at this most recent rebuild. And you say post Jimmy Butler trade, like that's day one.
Right. Line of demarcation
of this rebuild. They've actually done a pretty good job in terms of personnel and acquiring assets. The PR is a disaster. Boylan's a disaster. If they don't upgrade from Chris Dunn, they'll never win. And Levine and Markkanen might not be able to play together, but we've seen them play together for less than 50 games. So I don't know that definitively. It's way too small of a sample, but right now it's just
how much do you need to see? I mean, what's typical?
We need the rest of the year, and when we need a point guard. Like we need a point guard so that Levine doesn't have to do it all, and to see how these guys play off of like an actual NBA-level distributor,
mm-hmm.
Which is why it sucks that no one at the top of this draft is a point guard. They're all wings and big men.
Williamson's a monster, though.
Well, of course.
I know that's not the position he plays, but he is a monster, and if they get him, sign me up.
Of course. RJ Barrett, the same thing. It's positionless basketball. You add talent, and you figure out the rest later. But they got to get a point guard. I don't know how. I don't know when. But they got to get one because they don't run an offense.
Bulls Lakers later tonight, right here on the Score LeBron. Sports Radio 670. Yeah, I'm gonna eavesdrop on that a little bit. Swirsk has got to have something up his sleeve, right? He's in Lipstick City.
I'm sure.
All of the stars come out to play Billy Jack Nicholson. Ooh, loved him in The Shining. Very scary movie.
God. Salsa. That's what we need from the That's the entertainment value of the Bulls right now.
Southern California.
Sauce.
That's Kyle an over-Chicago-ized sauce, isn't it?
Well, it's worse.
Well, that's how a guy from Seattle proves that he's from Chicago. He says that.
Sauce.
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 Ooh.
Interesting.
I almost choked on the sauce. Bill was there. You were at the table.
Sauce. Sausage.
There's some football audio from the station today.
Fish tacos in Southern California on the Media Lounge.
It's McNeil and Parks on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.